Welcome to this episode of Wildcast. I'm your host, Matt Blymeyer. Our guest today is a 19-year veteran as the head baseball coach at Penn College. We're going to throw away the rundown with his introduction because he has done so much. We're just going to get into his experience. Welcome to the podcast, Chris Howard. Chris, welcome.
Thanks, Matt, but you're more than welcome to give the throwdown. I want to hear all the great stuff I've done.
Well, so generally we do, you know, a quick rundown of people's past achievements and accomplishments leading up to their time at Penn College. And that usually takes maybe 10 to 15 seconds. For you, because of everything you've experienced, which we'll get into momentarily, the intro would have been a whole minute probably, just reading off everything you've done.
I'm blushing, Matt. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're a living legend.
Yes, Chris. In my own mind.
Yes. All right, so let's start. You were born in San Diego. You made your way to Overland Park, Kansas with your family. At some point, you guys moved to Houston after you went to college. But your first college experience, you had a full football scholarship to Oklahoma, where you played both football and baseball, eventually moving on to Louisiana Lafayette to pursue your baseball dreams. And then you got drafted in the Major League Draft by the Seattle Mariners, and you played with that organization for, I believe, eight-ish years. Is that
eight or nine? Yeah, that's about right. Yeah.
Okay, so let's go back to Kansas.
Okay.
Teenage Chris Howard, your high school didn't have a baseball team.
That is correct.
Had a football team. You're very good at football. You played baseball in the summer, and so the opportunities were probably a little bit different because there wasn't a high school baseball team, but your prowess on the football field led you to Oklahoma. Let's talk about your going to college, why Oklahoma, that experience, playing both sports at such a high level.
Well, high school, it was odd. I mean, I always tease Tyler Minch, our men's soccer coach, because when I was a freshman in high school, our school was voting on whether to bring on a soccer team or a baseball team, and they chose soccer. So I kid him that I've ever since that day have disliked soccer immensely, which I don't. I mean, I actually do enjoy watching the sport, but back then as a 14-year-old, you kind of get crushed. But I could have transferred to a public school there, but I enjoyed my friends who were at the high school, so I just decided to continue going to school there, play football. I played a little basketball for a couple of years, and then baseball. I did summer leagues when I was a junior in high school. I played in a couple of the college leagues that were around the city. So I had plenty of baseball and plenty of high-quality baseball. I just didn't have a lot of college scouts, I guess, recruiters looking at me baseball-wise. It was a lot different back then, too, with the way the whole structure of baseball works with not just summer leagues, but the travel teams. Travel teams were really non-existent back when I was in high school, so that probably would have changed a lot of stuff, too. I could have gotten involved with that, but I wanted to stay with the people I grew up with, where I went, and that's why I ended up staying at school. And I was fortunate. I mean, I was pretty good at football, so I mean that helped me kind of catapult me into the college spotlight. And when I was being recruited junior, senior year, I basically, every school that came to me, I just said, I'd like to play baseball while I'm there as well. Some of them said yes, some of them said no. Oklahoma was one of the schools that obviously said, we don't mind. I sat in front of Barry Switzer. I mean, he told me, listen, as long as you're playing, he goes, I don't want you to sit on the bench when you could be out here at spring football doing your stuff. It was important to me that, you know, I made sure I was playing. And as it turned out, the funny thing was, is my freshman year in college, I was so into the whole Oklahoma football machine and stuff like that. I didn't even play baseball my freshman year in college because I wanted to play spring football.
Yeah.
And
this was 83, 84?
That was 80. It would have been 84. The spring of 85 is when it would have been my first college baseball experience. Okay. But I decided that much to the chagrin of my dad, I decided that I was going to play spring football and see what I could, you know, what I could do there. I mean, honestly, as the spring went on, I started missing baseball and kind of asking, you know, what am I doing? You know, I wish I would have played baseball instead, but we kind of fixed that in the second year. So
as a football player, I think it was your first or second year, freshman or sophomore year on the football team, you guys won a national championship.
Yeah, that's the second year. That's my second year there.
And for those local people listening, who'd you guys beat?
We beat the Nittany Lions of Penn State. Wow. And I do let everybody know that. And my youngest daughter, Sophie, who went to Penn State, graduated from there, she's very well aware of that as well.
Nice. So you win a national championship, you're on a football scholarship, but there's this itch you need to scratch, which is baseball. When did you realize or make the decision that your passion and your journey is now baseball?
Well, it was weird because honestly, my passion and my journey was always baseball. Mm. I look back now and maybe as a rebellious 18-year-old, maybe I decided to play college football to kind of, you know, because as a kid, you want to be your own man, stuff like that, and didn't have to worry about dad telling me, you need to be playing baseball. I said, no, I'm going to play football. But it was always my passion. I mean, and that really was, I knew deep down that baseball was what was going to take me where I wanted to go. It wasn't football. I loved playing the sport. I loved football. It afforded me to go to school on scholarship. But when I got there, I realized there's a lot of guys who are a lot faster than you, a lot of guys a lot bigger than you are. I still held my own, but I realized pretty quickly that, you know what, this was not what I was meant to do. I wanted to play ball, baseball, and that's kind of how that kind of evolved over that first year of college when I really kind of realized that what I was doing now, I was missing the other thing way too much. So I knew that's what it was.
And I think it was your assistant coach at Oklahoma gets the head coaching job at Louisiana Lafayette, Raging Cajuns.
That's right.
And you make the decision to follow him there and focus primarily on baseball. Was that a difficult decision, difficult conversation with the football coaches?
Well, not with the football coaches because I played football my first 2 years at Oklahoma. My third year, I played strictly baseball at OU. And the funny story is I was still on football scholarship. So I'm not sure if that was legal or not, but I'm...
Statute of limitations.
That's right. So I went in, the baseball coach after my first year of playing balls, which would have been my second year of college, he came to me and said, do you want to play baseball year round? And I said, yeah, I do. But, you know, I'm on football scholarship, so this is going to be difficult. I don't want to have to pay to come here. So he said, you need to go see Coach Switzer. And I went there and I sat in Coach Switzer's office. We talked. He said, if baseball's what you want to do, then I have no problem with you playing. He goes, but I will tell you this, if you're riding the pine, you're not doing anything, you're not playing, then I'm going to want you to come back here. So I was, you know, obviously very happy, thanked him for it. I love what he did for me. Not too many coaches would have done that. And I went back my third year of college, and that was my first year of fall baseball. And that's when I concentrated strictly on baseball as a college athlete. It was after that year that I wasn't catching. I was DHing. I was playing third base a little bit, and I'd never played another position in my life other than catch. So it was a big transition. It wasn't that I wasn't happy. I just felt like, if I'm going to pursue my dreams as a professional, I got to be behind the plate because that was the only way that I felt like I was going to be able to play professionally. And it just so happened that the assistant coach got the head coaching job at Louisiana. And I'm throwing air quotes up here. I asked him if I could go down there and play when it was really kind of the other way around. He asked if I wanted to come down there. And I said, absolutely. I said, I want to catch. I think that's the only way that I'm really going to get a good look. And the hardest conversation I had was with Coach Enos Seymour, who was our baseball coach there, because uh, I I love that man. I mean, he did a lot for me those 2 years, you know, kind of helped facilitate the whole thing with moving me from football to baseball and going in and telling him that I wanted to leave and go down there where I could catch every day. That was one of the toughest things that I'd ever done. In fact, Coach Seymour just passed away a few months ago, and he was somebody that really influenced a lot of what had happened to me from college on. So going to him and telling him, and I loved Oklahoma too. I mean, I loved being there, but I always felt like that if college was trying to prepare you for your job afterwards, then I needed to go somewhere where I felt like I was going to be prepared for a job of playing ball. And that's why, and I said, you know what, I got to do this. And I went down there and it turned out to be the right decision.
Yeah, you're still a Sooner at heart. You've named a dog Boomer.
That is correct.
On your social media when they're playing well, you'll just in all caps put Boomer with a couple exclamation points. So at heart, you're still a Sooner.
Yeah, and I always will be. I mean, it's funny. I just recently started watching a little more and getting more into the alumni stuff of the Louisiana baseball program. I've been getting a lot more involved. So, but yeah, I mean, I spent 3 years at OU. And so it is. I mean, that it will always kind of be number one. But the opportunities that were afforded me when I went to Louisiana, I will never forget those. I mean, I wouldn't have achieved anything had I not gone. I mean, who knows? I could have stayed at Oklahoma, and could I have been drafted as a third baseman, a designated hitter? Maybe. I don't know. But I always felt like I had to go somewhere that would help me out. And as painful as it was to leave OU, my time in Louisiana, although it was only a year, it was well worth it.
We were looking up the all-time records. You're still, for a single season, you still have several single season records there. So congratulations on that. And also, I believe either your name and or your picture is at the stadium as MLB alums of Louisiana Lafayette.
Yeah, it's cool. I didn't even know that until a former teammate of mine sent me the picture of the, the stadium is a lot different than when I was there. I mean, they've done really well since my team in 88 was the first time we ever went to a regional for that school. So, and ever since then, they've since been to a College World Series and are pretty successful now. And excuse me, have built up a pretty nice stadium, but they have an area now that kind of pays homage to all the former major league players that have gone through there. So that was kind of cool to, you know, see my picture and then the big Seattle Mariners logo above it and all that. So, which kind of makes me feel bad because I have not been there in, I don't know, 10, 15 years maybe, other than driving through one time on the way back from Houston.
You have a very good year at Louisiana Lafayette. The Major League Draft is coming up. Are you back? Your family had since moved from Kansas to Houston. So are you back home in Houston during the draft, or are you still in Louisiana?
No, I was in Houston. So, Houston. But they moved to Houston right after my senior year of high school. So okay. Right before the summer before I started my freshman year at Oklahoma, they moved to Houston.
Okay, walk us through the draft process. Maybe where you thought you were going, if you were going at all, if you thought you would go undrafted, maybe catch on as a free agent.
Well, it was pretty nerve-wracking. It's not like now where you have social media and you can almost see immediately who's going where and all that other stuff. So, I mean, back then you're literally sitting at home waiting for a phone call. And a great draft day story. I think I may have shared it with you before, but leading up to the draft, I mean, scouts are getting a hold of you and you kind of get an idea of who's interested, who's not interested, things like that. But the first day of the draft, I get a phone call about 11 o'clock in the morning. Answer it. It's the scout from the St. Louis Cardinals. He said, Chris, we've been through 8 rounds. And he says, if you're still on the board, we're going to pick you with our 9th pick. And we talked for probably 20, 30 minutes on where they were going to send me. In fact, I think I was going to be sent somewhere up here in the New York Penn League that Williamsport used to be involved with. And they were going to send me here. Here's what they were going to give me for a signing bonus, which wasn't very much. And just everything. I mean, we literally hammered out everything. And he goes, listen, I'll call you back when it's official, blah, 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 all this stuff. So we hang up. I called the first person I call my dad. I said, Dad, the Cardinals are, they said they've gone through eight rounds. They're going to take me in the ninth round. So by that time, I probably hadn't hung up. He had already called half the family and told everybody I was going to St. Louis. And the rest of the day goes by, I don't get a phone call. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, that's kind of odd. I mean, but he's basically already told me everything, so I'll just wait for it. Day two of the draft goes.
And so this is late 80s, though. So
late
80s. You're thinking, am I a Cardinal? You could
there's
be, you
no
could
cell
not
phone,
be.
So right, I can't, no, you know, I can't text any. Yeah, I can't text anybody, hey, what's going on, or anything like that. So day two of the draft comes. Morning, afternoon, evening, still no phone call. And I'm like, okay, this is starting to be a little weird. I mean, something's not right. Day three of the draft comes. The morning goes, afternoon. We're late in the evening. And I'll tell you when I got the call, because this will really date me, but Johnny Carson was on. And I'm on Central Daylight Time, so he starts at 10:30. About 11 o'clock at night, the phone rings. Well, you know, your dad, he's looking at me like nobody else is calling this house at 11 o'clock at night. So I get up and answer. And the guy goes, could I speak to Chris Howard? I go, you're speaking to him right now. He goes, Chris, congratulations. The Seattle Mariners, we picked you in the Major League Draft. I was kind of stunned. I'm like, Seattle? I said, God, did I get the two names mixed up? Did I think I was talking to the St. Louis guy, and it was really the Seattle guy? And I go, what round did I go in? And he goes, hey, that doesn't matter, Chris. You're getting an opportunity to play Major League Baseball. And when he said that, I knew something was up. I said, no, seriously, what round did I go in? He goes, we chose you in the 41st round. Matt, I didn't even know there were 41 rounds in the draft. I was like, I didn't know how to feel at that time. I'm just sitting there going, and all I can think of is, this guy from St. Louis told me they were taking me in round 9, and somehow I fell 32 rounds later, and Seattle's taking me. So
I'm sure the signing bonus was a little different.
You want to know something crazy? It was the same amount.
Was it really?
The same amount. I got $2,700 to sign in the 41st round, which is the exact same money St. Louis was offering me in the ninth round. So that'll tell you the whole thing. So I was kind of stunned, to be honest with you. It was kind of hard. You're trying to comprehend. You think you're going to St. Louis. You think you went in the top 10 rounds. 3 days later, I didn't even know Seattle really had a team, honestly. I mean, I think they came around in 78. The only thing I really knew about Seattle was a year earlier, they drafted this kid who was the son of Ken Griffey from the Big Red Machine, Cincinnati Reds, who was supposed to be really good. So that's really basically all I knew about the Seattle Mariners. Wow. So it was a crazy couple days trying to just, but that was my draft experience, sitting by a phone and then getting a call day one and then waiting 2 days later to hear that I've gone to a place that I had really no idea existed.
And so now you're a Mariner. Eventually you make your way at the time, Williamsport Bills were the AA franchise or the AA affiliate of the Seattle Mariners. So you come to Williamsport and Bowman Field, but that wasn't your first time in Williamsport or at Bowman Field. And we'll go back to what you were talking about earlier, where your dad kind of influenced you to play baseball, and there was a reason for that. When was your first time that you were ever at Williamsport, and why were you there?
The first time I'd ever been to Williamsport was in 1967. I was a year old. My dad was playing for the Williamsport Mets at the time. And there is home movies of me running around the outfield at Bowman Field chasing after baseball. So I always tell everybody, I don't know, the cosmos, the universe, I was destined to be in Williamsport. I mean, there was always that connection. I was here as a one-year-old while my dad was playing minor league ball. Who knew 18, 19 years later, I'd be right back here playing double-A baseball here in Williamsport. And who knew that, you know, 10, 15 years later after that, I'd be right back here married with three kids and raising a family and right here in Williamsport. So, like I said, I kind of laugh about it now, but it is kind of seems like Williamsport was always where I was supposed to be.
Eventually, you make your way through the system. You make it to the Mariners, and this is the load of Mariners. You have Griffey, you have Alex Rodriguez, you have Buehner, Tino Martinez, Randy Johnson. And I'm sure at the time they were just, you know, teammates of yours. There's, you know, several Hall of Famers and or potential future Hall of Famers that you were fortunate enough to play with.
Tino Martinez, who obviously went on to the Yankees and had great success there, but we kind of came up through the system together. Griffey, the time I spent with him in the minor leagues before was basically time in instructional league, which is something they send your prospects to at the end of the season. And you could see as an 18-year-old kid, he was way above anything I'd ever thought was possible. So you knew he was going to be really good. But Randy Johnson, he eventually gets traded over. Buehner was great. Alex Rodriguez didn't show up until about 93, 94, but Edgar Martinez, who I still, you know, use a lot of the stuff that he taught me hitting wise, I still share that with players today. But it's funny when you're playing and you're doing all that stuff and you're trying to stay in the major leagues, you're trying to do this, you're trying to do that, you really don't, you recognize that you know you're playing with some really good players. But it does take some time, you know, and reflection looking back to realize that, you know, how did this team not win all the time? You know, it was one of those things. And you don't think a lot about it. I mean, like you said, they're your teammates, but you can't kind of appreciate of the greatness that you were able to be around. Ken Griffey Jr. is one of the greatest players of all time. I've told you several times, I think Alex Rodriguez, and I know a lot of people, you know, he's got his history with certain things and stuff like that, but I still think Alex Rodriguez was the best player I'd ever played with or seen. Guys like, you know, Tino, we became really good friends, and he became my son's godfather and all that other stuff.
Groomsman in your wedding.
Groomsman in the wedding, and you're playing with Randy Johnson, who was a dominant pitcher. Edgar Martinez, all these guys that you ended up playing with and were teammates with, and just being around that type of greatness was pretty much an honor. So, but at the time you don't realize it until, you know, years down the road, and it's like, wow, but how was I on that roster?
As you're playing professional baseball, you begin to start your family here in Williamsport. Baseball career comes to an end. You come back to Williamsport. Eventually you get into coaching. When did you know that coaching was where you were going to go next?
Well, it was an odd time in my life. There was a lot of transition going on. And when I retired from the game, I'll be honest with you, it was hard for me to watch baseball for about 3 years. You see a lot of your former teammates who are still playing, and it was really tough for me to play. So I kind of stepped away from the game completely for a while, other than my son started getting into the Little League stuff like that. But it wasn't until early 2000s, 2005, when I really started getting that itch, like, you know what, I'm a baseball player, I'm a baseball guy. What I'm doing is not making me happy. I need to do something that's in this realm. And that's when, I think it was 2005, I saw the ad for a head baseball coach here at Penn College. So I put my name in the hat, and as I say, the rest is history. But it wasn't one of those things where I retired, you know, what, 98, and said, okay, I'm going to stay in the game. It was one of those things where I stepped away from it for a little bit and realized, you know, a few years later that, man, this is what I was meant to do. So I knew I had to be in the game at some capacity.
Yeah, the path that you took to being the head coach is very non-traditional. That was your first coaching job.
Very first.
So you're a head college coach as the first time ever coaching. What was the experience like? You were thrown right into this, my program, you know, how it goes. And I'm sure there was a little bit of a learning curve and some growth there.
Oh, that's honestly, Matt, it's been a learning curve. And every year I've been here, I mean, I am always learning something new. Something new is happening. I'm learning something new. I never felt like this has been stagnant where, okay, I've learned everything I need to know. So, and in a sense, I love that. But I'll be honest with you, those first couple of years, it was kind of not scary, I don't think is the way to say it. But I mean, I wanted to do so well that I'm reading things. I'm going back in the Rolodex in my head thinking, okay, what did Coach Seymour do? What did my coach in Louisiana, Coach Bollinger, do? Then I'm going professional coaches. Okay, how did we do this, do that? And I'm trying to piece together my own program and taking things from, which is what coaches do. You take things from what you've learned here and there, mm-hmm. and you try and piece them together and turn it into your own. So it was the nuts and bolts of the baseball and strategy and all that was the easy part. What was the part that I really had to get used to and was the recruiting and bringing kids in and stuff like that and trying to develop my own way of recruiting somebody. And you're right, it's different. If you're not an assistant who is basically being tutored by the head coach on how to do things, you really are just kind of flying by the seat of your pants. But I wanted to make sure, and even if I had to fake it until I make it, how to do it the right way and, you know, at least make it look like I was trying to do it the right way. So
2005, get the job. In the first 8 years, you'd won a few championships in the PSUAC, and now 2015 comes around. We are in a provisional year of NCAA, but we are members of the NEAC, so we play Division III competition. The only downside is if anybody wins a championship during your provisional year, you can't go on to the NCAA tournament. And you really tested that out because the very first championship that Penn College has as an NCAA school in the NEAC was baseball. What was that first year in the NEAC like, just winning, coming out and just winning a championship?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I thought, heck, this is easy. We're going to do this every year. We just came in here. We're the new kids on the block. We win the championship. And I was just like thinking, okay, how many rings can we possibly get in the time we're here? We went to SUNY Poly for the last series of the season, and we had to win one of those games, and we go up there and we lose both. So we're on the bus ride home thinking, well, we just blew that. Well, you know, let's go at it next year. Let's see what happens. Then I get a call. We're about an hour away from the campus here and found out that one of the schools that all they had to do was win one and then jump us. They lost both their games, so we ended up, you know, backdooring into the number four seed. So, and then we go back to SUNY Poly because they're the number one team in the conference for the tournament. And like you said, we could do no wrong. Yeah. And we won three straight games and it was great. We won the conference championship. And then that kind of hit me like, wow, we don't get to go to the regionals. Yeah. This is terrible. This is awful. So I've always wondered why we can't just kind of, you know, put a NCAA banner up just for the heck of it, just kind of for the 2015 squad, just to.
Yeah, I think eventually we can talk, maybe temporarily get a few pictures and
maybe something. Yeah, just something. But it was fun, but it did kind of validate what I felt like we really had. Like, you know what? And in a way, if you want to be honest, I think it kind of validated that we could be successful as an athletic department.
It sure did.
We just went in there and we just won a championship year one.
Yeah.
So, and that's always been important to me, that the entire department and all of our programs are successful, because if they're all successful, then we all benefit from that. So it was never, I just want to be the top dog and win all the championships and everybody else. That's not how you grow a department. So I think it kind of helped everybody to know that, hey, maybe we do belong in the NCAA and all this other stuff. Yeah. So, and then we've been trying to get back to that ever since. So
yeah. Well, you've had, I believe, 3 more appearances in the conference finals since then. So in 10 years, 4 final appearances, 1 championship. That's sustained success. Even obviously, you want to win it, but there is sustained success in being that successful during that period of time. How do you develop that success? What are your philosophies and the pillars of your program that has allowed you to have this success on the field and off the field?
Right. Well, honestly, it's first and foremost, it's the type of student athlete you bring into your program. To me, a coach is as good as his players. Let's be perfectly honest with you. I can be the greatest baseball coach in the world, but if I bring in below average players, we're not going to win. It doesn't matter what you do. Below average talent is not going to win you ball games. They may be great people and all that other stuff, but it won't win you games. So when I go out, I'm looking for not only great people, but I'm looking for guys who can play and who aren't afraid to get out there and work hard and do that stuff. And I think that's why we've been successful. It's just the type of student athlete we bring in here. And it might be because of the school too, just the type of players and students and people that the school brings in. Hands-on, hardworking kids, they're not afraid to get dirty, things like that. So that's the number one key. You can talk X's and O's all you want to, but if you're not bringing in the right type of person, and I'm not just talking about good baseball player. Mm-hmm. I want somebody that the school can be proud of, somebody that represents the college and the community the way that, you know, you want to be represented. And I think we continue to bring those type of kids into the program, and that is the key. We can teach, you know, and help develop athletic skills and things like that, but you got to have that base, that type of person before you can even move forward. And that's where you do get the sustained success, because those kids teach the new guys, here's how it's done, here's what we do, that's not acceptable, this is how you do it. And it just keeps getting passed down from year to year. And then hopefully you can sprinkle in a little more W's than L's in the meantime. I would much rather have a team full of hardworking kids who are going out there, who do things the right way, who you don't go home and hit the hay and wonder, am I going to get a call at 3 a.m. because we got, you know, total chaos going on. I'd rather have a team full of that than just somebody who's, we're going to win every championship and this and that. Yeah, I want to win just like the next person, but I do want us to do it the right way in a way that you guys and everybody can say, hey, there goes the baseball team. Those guys are top notch.
You had a coach years ago, back in my journalist days. I think it was a football coach. He said, it's not about the X and O's, it's about the Jimmies and Joes.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. The simpleness of it, but it is true.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and it is simple. I mean, it's not rocket science. I mean, coaching is not rocket science. I know everybody falls in love with the coaches that get quoted all the time.
I'm a prospective student athlete right now. I'm a high school baseball player. How do I get in contact with you? What things are you looking for initially? And then when you come out to see me, what are you looking for when I'm playing a game?
I will tell you right now, I dislike profusely the emails that tell me they love the game of baseball and they've been playing it since they were 3 years old. I get that. That's fantastic. I want an email that says, hey, coach, I like what your school has to offer academically, and I'm also, you know what, I'm pretty darn good at baseball, and I'd like you to come out and take a look at me. It's a schedule of mine. If you have any other questions, things like that.
Parents listening out there, coaches do not like when parents email them, because it's going to be your son or daughter that is here the next 4 years, and that's who the coach is going to be coaching. So refrain from speaking on behalf of your child. It is a bit of a turnoff for coaches.
And the reason is, I mean, when they get here, I mean, and I tell the guys all the time, you may not realize this, and it may be hard for you to realize, but you're adults now. Mm-hmm. You're 18 to 22-year-olds. I mean, you can make your own decisions. Now, you may very well have your parents paying for your education, so obviously they have a little bit of pull. But when it comes to this team And I'm dealing with you. Your mom or dad, they're not playing. So I'm dealing with you. Because honestly, when I get an email from a parent, I don't know if the kid's really that serious about mm-hmm. playing ball. Is this what his mom and dad want him to do, or is right. this what he wants to do? So, and if you're not 100% committed to not just athletics, but your academics, you're gonna struggle. Yeah. So
those 6 a.m. practices in January,
they're tough. Yeah. And if this is not what you really want to do, it's gonna show, first of all, and secondly, you're gonna be miserable. So it's not a coincidence that a lot of our all-conference players and the guys who are really successful also are really good students. It happens all the time.
High batting average, high GPA.
I'm amazed at how often that is the case, and that's because you have somebody who's willing to make those type of sacrifices and those type of commitments. So those are the guys I'm looking for, the guys who aren't afraid to do both.
This might be a tough question considering you're going to have to go back in the Rolodex 19 years. Is there a favorite moment so far in your coaching career? And it could be 2 or 3. It could be on the field, off the field.
The easy one is obviously winning the first conference championship. And I'm talking about the first NEAC conference championship. Mm-hmm. That was exciting. I'll be honest with you. It's more about the relationships that I have with the players more than an actual moment out on the field. A player sends me a picture or texts me about their new baby or something. I love that stuff. Went to one of my ex-players' weddings a couple years ago. Things like that, those are what really stand out the most. Mm-hmm. Is and I tell the guys all the time, listen, 30 years from now, you guys aren't going to remember that math test you aced in here, but you'll remember what you did with your teammates. And it's a lot of times, it's not what happens out on the field. It's a bus trip. We had bus karaoke coming back from Myrtle Beach this year. You'll remember that forever. You'll remember the laughing and all the stuff you're doing. And those are the things that really stand out. The winning championships and coaching, all conference guys, those are easy and obvious things to say, but it's having Shane Price or Devin Sanders who are former players who are calling me all the time asking me, hey, what would you do here or there, because they're coaching and stuff. I want advice and, just kind of talking to them like equals instead of a coach player. And it's things like that because here the funny thing, Matt, is and I sit back in my chair and I think about this all the time. Next year, there will only be a handful of people who will probably remember who won the conference championship in baseball this past year. Mm-hmm. And that's the truth. It's like winning the World Series. You really don't remember all those things. It's the other things that really matter. The taking somebody, I won't name names because I don't want to embarrass anybody, but somebody who comes in as a freshman and who is literally struggled for 4 years to keep his grades up, worked so hard and literally worked hard and just barely got by. But you know what? He's graduating and he's going to get that diploma. And I kid around with him. It doesn't say barely on your diploma. It's you've got that degree and you got that diploma. It says you're a college graduate now. So it's guys like that who you see just are constantly working hard and then finally have that payoff at the end. That's really what coaching means to me.
It's family, friends want to follow the journey of Penn College baseball. You're very active on Twitter and Instagram. Where can they follow you?
I am very active, even though I don't know the actual names of the sites. But Twitter, we're at PCT Baseball. And Instagram, which is, you'll find some of my best work on Instagram.
He loves his music.
Also, I love the music. I'm kind of an innovator when it comes to that. I know others might have more fancy stuff going up there, but the music is the best. And we're also at PCT Baseball on Instagram.
Great. Well, Coach Howard, thank you so much for joining us today. That wraps up this episode of Wildcast.